sorry. All right, today for our biography, we are going to travel back to the late 1700s and to America first up. And this was where Adoniram Judson was born, 1788 in Massachusetts, America. Now, he was born into a very much a Christian home. His father was quite a stern pastor of a Congregationalist church there in America. And as he grew up, you know, he was taught strong Christian principles. He was an extremely intelligent child, probably genius standard. Once his father went away for 2 weeks, and his mother, just because she could, decided she would teach Adoniram to read. At the end of the 2 weeks, 3-year-old Adoniram read out a whole chapter from the Bible to his father. Of course, he whizzed through school, and he skipped many grades. And by the age of 16, he had entered university. And even then, he skipped through university as well. And he finished top of his year, and he had many, many awards and so on. But during his time at university, he was very much influenced by the friends around him, and one particular friend by the name of Jacob Eames. Now, this particular friend was a deist, and that was kind of a new and liberal way of thinking in those days. These people, you know, they were quite anti-Christian in their ideas. They were modern thinkers. They looked at philosophy. They decided that actually Christianity and other religions were a mere corruption of the true natural order of things. So this was Jacob Eames' passion. And because he was also quite an intellectual individual and very sophisticated thinker, you know, Adoniram and him became good friends. And he was a huge influence on Adoniram. But the two of them together spurred each other on in their anti-Christian ideas. When he eventually went home, he broke this news to his parents. And he said to his parents, you know, who actually hoped that maybe he would be a pastor or follow his father's footsteps. He said to his father, "There's no way. In fact, I don't even believe in God anymore. And, you know, definitely don't believe in Jesus or the Bible. So I'm not following your footsteps at all." And his attitude and his fervor against Christianity really broke his parents' heart. And his mother started to pray for him every day. Now, if with his quite liberal thinking, he also wanted a very liberal lifestyle. He didn't want to be stuck in sort of the typical kind of intellectual fields. He wanted to write for theatre. That was his kind of aim. And so he decided that he would travel to New York and get a job writing plays for theatre and work his way up into that world. So he asked his parents for some money. He got a horse, and he took off to New York. Well, it really wasn't all he thought it should be. He had all these idealistic ideas of what it would be like, and it really wasn't. So after 5 weeks, he found himself heading back home. On the way home to Massachusetts, you know, you have to stop on the way. And he ended up stopping at this an ordinary inn on the highway. There wasn't much room in this inn. It was quite full. Most of the rooms were full, and the innkeeper was quite reluctant. But there was one room available, but the innkeeper said, "Oh, well, we've actually been keeping it free because, well, unfortunately, the person next door is very sick. And, you know, with the comings and goings and this person screaming and crying, nobody really would want to sleep next door. You know, it wouldn't be... Well, you would feel very uneasy, I'm sure." But Adoniram was just like, "Ugh, I wouldn't feel uneasy. For me, death is nothing, you know. There is no heaven and hell and all that foolish talk." So he was very, I guess, arrogant in his attitude. And he felt that, he said to the innkeeper, it wouldn't make him uneasy at all. And so, of course, the innkeeper gave him that last room. But during the night, as he lay down, he did hear the groans and the cries of this dying man next door. And it it did get quite bad, and the walls were very thin, and he could even hear him screaming out and crying, and he could hear what he was saying. And Adoniram did become uneasy. But he tried to channel all those things that he and Jacob had talked about, his view of the world. But the uneasiness didn't leave him. And in fact, as he lay there, he kept thinking, what if it was me that was lying in that bed, dying? Would I be ready to face death? But after a sleepless night, he went downstairs in the morning to check out of this inn. And he said to the innkeeper, how was the man? Is he better? And the innkeeper said, no, he died in the early hours of the morning. Such a shame. He was a young man, just like you. And for some reason, Adoniram said, what was his name? And the innkeeper said, his name was Jacob Eames. And Adoniram was shaken to the core. There, crying, screaming in fear, was his friend. His friend who he'd looked up to all these years, who'd formed his thinking and his worldview. He was so shaken that he just jumped on his horse and he rode. He didn't even know where he was going. And as he rode, the words dead, lost, lost, dead resounded in his ears. Now, this experience was the beginning of something that repelled him to God. He realized how foolish he had been and how empty all his world views had been at that time. When he went back home, he really shocked his parents by saying that he wanted to enter straight away into theological college in Andover. They knew something big had happened. He was very much a changed person, but he wasn't converted just at that point. A little while after starting at theological college, he really found the Lord. During his time here at the theological college in Andover, he started to think about this idea of going overseas as a missionary, going to other places, far away, far-flung countries. And he actually read, he picked up this account that a British military officer had written about the country called Burma. And at that time, absolutely nothing was known about this country, which is modern-day Myanmar. And the thing is, this idea of mission and missionaries and all this kind of thing was actually very, very unusual. At this time, in the early 1800s, America had not sent any missionaries overseas. So there was no such thing as a mission organization or anything like that. And soon, Adoniram and a couple of other young men got together and really tried to help the university put together some sort of funding to send them overseas. And Adoniram himself felt really strongly that he should go to Burma. But really, no one knew anything about Burma. Didn't know that. There was no information other than this short account from a military officer who'd passed through. Meanwhile, Anne, then Anne Haseltine, was living not so far away. She was a young, beautiful socialite living in a very large household. She had a very big family. She was the youngest daughter, and she was actually often in demand to come to parties and things like that. She was she had an extroverted personality. People were drawn to her. The family, of course, like everybody in those days, they attended church. But it wasn't until Anne was about 16, when a new teacher came, that she suddenly thought about her faith for the very first time. And this new teacher not only spoke to this Sunday school, but actually spoke elsewhere as well, and a huge revival happened in this particular congregation. In fact, Anne's whole family realized that none of them had ever been saved, even though they'd attended church their entire lives, and they were all converted. Now, this really was a first step for Anne, because she realized once she'd found the Lord that she had a lot of very, I guess, poor habits. And there was so much growth and struggle in these early teenage years when she became a Christian. She realized that a lot of her life was just frivolous. You know, she spent all her time thinking about the next hat to wear, her hairdo, the fashion, the dress, the materials, everything for the next social, one after the other. She really gave no thought for her life in any other way. And so she really struggled to make changes. She used to vow that she would think differently and she wouldn't do these things that she was in a habit of doing, but of course she'd fail. And she wrote in her journal that she really now understood that verse that says, "The carnal mind is enmity against God." But when she was converted, she also wanted to think very differently about her life. She didn't want to just waste it. And so with the limited options available, she decided she would study to be a teacher, and at least that way she could help other people. And her journals really show how much she was growing. You know, at 17 she wrote, "The more grace Christians have, the clearer they can see the contrast between holiness and sin." Now, the Hasseltine household was definitely in the habit of hospitality, and that is how Adoniram and Anne met. He was 22 and she was 21. And they immediately began discussing matters of faith. And in Anne, Adoniram found somebody who really understood his burden to become a missionary, even though such a thing was so unusual at that time. About a month afterwards, Adoniram wrote to Anne's father to ask for her hand in marriage. And I would say this would be one of the most extraordinary proposal letters ever written. Here's an excerpt. "Dear sir, I have now to ask whether you can consent to part with your daughter early next spring, to see her no more in this world, whether you can consent to her departure for a heathen land, to her exposure to the dangers of the ocean, to every kind of want and distress, to degradation, to insult, to persecution, and perhaps even a violent death. Can you consent to all this for the sake of the perishing, for the sake of him who left his heavenly home and died for her and for you, for the sake of immortal souls, for the sake of Zion, and for the sake of the glory of God?" What a letter. And John and Rebecca Hasseltine agreed. But they actually said to Anne, "It really should be your decision, not ours." Anne did love Adoniram. But more than that, she really did share his vision to go overseas. But actually, this was really unusual, because no woman had ever left America to be a missionary anywhere. And actually, it was thought to be completely inappropriate. You know, the idea of going to some foreign land, and particularly a land no one knew anything about, like Burma, it was kind of like saying go to Mars in those days. And then, you know, people actually accused Anne. They said that she was an idealist, she was empty-headed. They said that she was, you know, romantic in the extreme, or just simply wild. But Anne was really resolved to go. And actually, there were a few other young men and women who Anne's resolve and determination did influence. So in 1812, Anne and Adoniram were married, and very, very shortly afterwards, they said an emotional farewell, and five men and three women left the shores of America to sail towards India first, and then they would be going off in different directions. Now, leaving was very, very hard. It was, for Anne, this was not the most pleasant of honeymoons. You know, she would often just be in fits of tears as she remembered her family, which realistically she understood she may never see again. And she also had no idea what her life would be like. They didn't even know if they could set foot in Burma. They didn't know what the government was like there. They had no image in their mind of what it could be. They didn't know where they'd end up. They didn't know whether they would even make it. But all her journals reflect this quiet certainty in God's sovereignty and just complete trust. Now, Burma at that time in the 1800s was actually quite a prosperous, or relatively prosperous, kingdom. It's between sort of India and Siam, which is Thailand, and China. At that time, it was entirely Buddhist. In fact, to be Burmese was to be Buddhist, and no subject was allowed to convert to any other religion. And very, very few foreigners had come to Burma, had even passed through, and the people who had come had either been killed there. There was one missionary there, Felix Carey, the son of William Carey, and he'd only arrived in 1807. So very few people had entered its borders. And actually, William Carey, who was based in India at this time, strongly advised that Adoniram and Ad Judson not go to Burma. And it was too dangerous. They were notorious for their brutal treatment. The king was quite corrupt. And they had horrific tortures, and the executions were awful. But Adoniram and Anne still felt called to go to this country. Their voyage took them first to India, where they stayed with William Carey for a while. And of course, in those days, travel was so slow. You had to wait months and months for another ship and so on. And so they were in India for a good period. And then they finally set sail from India all the way to Burma. This was not a pleasant journey. In fact, Anne was heavily pregnant at the time. And on this voyage, she gave birth to her first child, who was stillborn. And she became very ill. They actually had employed a servant to help Anne, but the servant died at the very beginning of the journey as well. And so this first introduction to Burma was very difficult. When they finally arrived in Rangoon, they were really shocked at the sight of this place. They had these houses set on bamboo poles because the whole place used to flood. But then they would also just drop all the waste and everything on just on the floor below. So everywhere was crawling with rats and flies. The drainage was very bad. You could imagine the smell. But also, Adoniram, when he looked out and he could see the skyline of this country, you could see wherever you looked the Golden Pagoda, which was the Buddhist temple. And this rose up in the center of the city. And it was actually meant to have been built on 8 hairs of Buddha himself or something like that. When Adoniram looked at this, he said, "A voice mightier than mine, a still small voice, will ere long sweep away every vestige of thy dominion, and the churches of Jesus Christ will soon supplant these idolatrous monuments." Well, Anne was still very sick and weak, and as she kind of was helped off the boat, she sat under a tree in the shade because she was absolutely exhausted, and she was just sort of bowed over. And people, as they were unloading the ships, were gathered around, and crowds came, and they were all gathered around Anne. And children would lift up the bonnet of her hat to look underneath and jump away. She was the first white woman to come to Burma. They had never seen another white woman, ever. Well, the couple settled in the home of Felix Carey, and he actually wasn't there at the time. He was traveling. He did medical things, like he did vaccinations and things across the country. And so the mission house was actually not in the city. It was outside the city, next to the public execution site and the rubbish dump. But it was adequate, and they were able to stay there. The minute they got there, they wasted no time. They got straight into studying the language. They knew that they would be completely useless if they couldn't speak the language. But what a language it was. Anne and Adoniram were both gifted with languages. Adoniram was fluent in Latin. Well, that didn't help here. This language had no European base whatsoever. It was so utterly bewildering. You know, the script was completely different. And to make matters worse, they didn't have punctuation, so you couldn't even work out where a word began and ended. And then on top of that, a lot of the books that he had access to were scratchings on palm leaves that were just sewn together. But he set up a punishing 12-hour-a-day schedule where he worked hard at studying the language. He employed a teacher, just a local. Of course, no one spoke English. And so this local would just point to objects and just name them. And Adoniram would follow him and try and learn. And Anne as well was really studying the language. When Carey returned to Rangoon and met Adoniram and Anne, he was so impressed. But for Adoniram, this punishing schedule, it almost pushed him to breakdown. That's how severely he studied. But in 6 months, he had a good grasp of the language, and Carey couldn't believe it. But Felix Carey himself had many of his own difficulties, and his wife and two children drowned in a boating accident, and he lost most of his possessions. And this incident really broke Felix Carey, and who was already prone to severe depression, and he ended up leaving. So Anne and Adoniram found themselves quite alone in the kingdom of Burma. Anne was very quick to pick up the spoken language. She worked with some of the servants and maids and so on in the home. But Adoniram really worked hard at studying the grammar, the style of writing. He wanted to get that right. He even studied the more formal Buddhist texts. And both of them managed to be fluent in 2 years. Both Anne and Adoniram had this huge sense of responsibility to the whole nation. In fact, there had been no converts at all. Not one. And the whole country, the feeling in the whole country was indifference. You know, people would always say to them, our religion is good for us, your religion is good for you. But Adoniram felt that he needed to set to work immediately to translate the Bible, to translate first the New Testament. He felt that this was so important, that the people would have the Word of God in their own language. And he believed also that he would at least be providing the foundation for the next generation of missionaries, possibly. Anne gave birth to a healthy baby boy in 1815, 2.5 years after their arrival in Burma. And this brought so much joy to the couple. They were so alone, really, but now they were a little family. And to top things off, they got their first letter from America, 2.5 years after arriving. That's how the communication was in those days. But the climate and the punishing schedule of language, they were meeting with locals, meant that they both suffered with a lot of illnesses. And of course, their little boy also. And he was taken with a fever, and he never recovered. These are the days before antibiotics. And so at just 8 months old, they found that they were burying their little boy, Roger Judson. They were both really devastated at this. It really, really hit them hard. Anne was very gifted with people, and she had quickly made an impression everywhere, including in the high echelons of society. And she had made very good friends with the viceroy's wife. Now, the viceroy was like the governor of the area. And on hearing on the death of Anne's little boy, the viceroy's wife immediately sent a procession of elephants to the mission house and came in all her state and insisted that Anne and Adoniram ride on an elephant through the Burmese countryside as a way of helping with their grief. And Anne and Adoniram accepted all these kindnesses and were quickly learning about the culture. But they really did struggle. They really struggled with the grief of losing their son. But what I can see, a bit of a theme in their lives, is they both had a sense of urgency. And they had this vision of eternity. And they knew that they had to lay aside these griefs because the Lord would one day wipe their tears from their eyes. Adoniram had heard that there were some Burmese-speaking Christians living in Chittagong, a city that was in Bengal, which was under India at that time, a British control in India. Now, Adoniram really wanted to speak to these people and wanted to persuade them maybe that some of them would come to Burma, because he really wanted to break this impression that Christianity was a white man religion. It was just for foreigners. So he set off in December of 1817. And, of course, in those days, the travel was very difficult. And the impossible currents and the headwinds and a few storms thrown in meant that this 12-day journey, two-week journey, turned out to be a disaster. It turned into a three-month journey because they couldn't pull in at Chittagong, and so they had to keep going. And then they ran out of all food and water. The crew and everybody on board became critically ill, including Adoniram. And finally, they were able to pull into a port somewhere. And Adoniram then had to make a 480-kilometre land journey down back to the south of India, wait for another 3 months before a ship was ready to sail him back to Rangoon. So this two-week journey turned into just over 6 months. Now, during this time, Anne had received news that the ship had never reached Chittagong, but that's all she knew. And she wondered, does that mean it just kept sailing, or does that mean it was lost at sea? Was Adoniram dead or alive? There, sort of waiting in the mission house in the backwater of Rangoon, she could get no news whatsoever. And this was such terrible uncertainty, and she wrote that she found this school of affliction a heavy, heavy trial, and she prayed to the Lord that she would be able to live out the phrase, "Though he slay me, yet will I trust him." But she was finding that very difficult. During this time, another missionary couple had arrived, George and Phoebe Howe. They had come from America, and they'd brought with them a printing press so that they could print out a lot of the things that Anne and Adoniram had written, you know, principles about Christianity, gospel tracts, and so on. But also just at this time, there were rumors of war between Britain and Burma. And immediately, George and Phoebe Howe said, "We need to get out of here. If there's war, we have to get out." And they found that there was one boat leaving Rangoon all the way to Calcutta in India. And they were insistent that they needed to get out. And so George and Phoebe had booked their tickets, and they begged Anne that she should come with them. They weren't going to leave her on her own. But then Anne was in this agony of indecision. Well, she couldn't just leave. Adoniram could be back at any point. And what happens if they missed each other? But then what happens if he's dead? What should she do? She just couldn't work it out. And George and Phoebe were so insistent, they would not leave her there on her own in this foreign land, a woman on her own. No, she must come. And so very reluctantly, Anne packed her things. And without knowing what was going to happen, she booked her ticket. When they loaded onto this ship, Anne was she had no peace. She was restless. But you can't just get off a ship. It was sailing down the river now, and she felt so strongly that she shouldn't be on that ship, and she should be getting off. Just before the vessel hit open water and the open sea, the crew realized that it was tilting. It hadn't been loaded correctly. So they pulled into the nearest port, and they decided to unload and reload the ship properly. Well, Anne took this opportunity straight away, and she said, you know, that "I'm going to get off. That's it. I'm leaving the ship." And George and Phoebe were horrified and said, you can't do that." But she was sure. She had no peace being on that ship, and so she felt that the Lord was leading her to get off. And so she took her things, and on her own made the difficult voyage by land and then by boat back to her mission house in Rangoon. And there she just decided that she would just trust the Lord entirely and leave everything to him. And she continued with her writing and translating. 3 days later, Adoniram suddenly returned. That voyage to Chittagong had been a complete waste of time. He never even got there. But both of them had learnt such big lessons about trusting the Lord in absolutely everything. For this couple, learning the language was not enough. They realized that to really get into to understand the Burmese people, they needed to know the culture. And so they were observing the culture and they were trying to understand how the society worked. And they observed when they looked at the way things were set up in Buddhism and the way people approached Buddhist teachers and so on, they realized that there were these little buildings scattered about called zayats. And these were often in the main streets. You see, people didn't necessarily go to a temple to get teaching. They would go to these roadside huts. The front was often sheltered but open, and travelers could just pause there for shade and tea. But the Buddhist teachers would also be sat there, and people could often just sit and come and talk. So Adoniram decided he would do the same. He built himself a hut on the main road, Pagoda Road, that led from the town to the great golden pagoda. And he built this with that open front, and he would sit there all day and welcome people in to come and talk. Anne would sit in the covered part at the back, and she would get women to come, and they would sit, and she would introduce them to this man called Jesus Christ. And this actually was very successful, because people were familiar with this, and they came, and soon Adoniram became known as the teacher. On the 30th of April, 1819, over 6 years after arriving in Burma, one man stopped in that zayat and listened to Adoniram. This man was Mong Nao, and he was the very first Burmese to become a Christian. And there certainly could be no ulterior motive for this. He knew that his conversion to become a Christian would definitely lead to persecution. There were no other Burmese Christians. And Adoniram and Anne were overjoyed. For 6 years of intense work, meeting with people, talking with people, writing, there finally was fruit, and the Lord was at work. This young man drank in the scriptures. He remembers this first time when he heard Adoniram read Matthew 5, 6, and 7, the Sermon on the Mount, and he was physically trembling. He said that this teaching was so different. It just contrasted completely with everything he had understood about the world through Buddhism. Well, only a few weeks after hearing for the first time, Mong Nao was baptized, and this little church of three sat down and broke bread together. Well, more and more people were coming to the Zayat, including quite prominent Buddhist teachers. But this also attracted attention by officials who were wondering what was going on exactly. And soon there came demands for money. There was harassment. And then in the community there were rumors of torture and threats of torture and death. And anyone who allied themselves with the foreigners would be, there would be consequences and so on. And suddenly Adoniram found that there were no visitors coming into his zayat. But that was not before another two people were baptized. And the situation was definitely getting very hard. Now that there were only three Christians in the country, and already, you know, the threats were coming in thick and fast. And so Adoniram decided to do something that was a little bit risky. He wanted to go to speak with the king. He thought that if the king was interested in the gospel, then there would be a huge opening for this country. So Adoniram and another missionary by the name of James Coleman and Mong Nao made the 500-kilometer journey to Ava, to speak to the king. They had various tracts to present in the Burmese language. But when the king heard and took the tracts, he threw them down on the ground and he declared again that no subject of Burma would ever be allowed to convert to a foreign religion. Well, they were, of course, escorted out. And when they came back to Rangoon, they told that this new little band of converts that they had, just three at that time, that they said, you know, this is hard. Maybe we need to go elsewhere because the threats will keep coming and people are not coming to here anymore. But these young converts begged Adoniram to stay. You know, they were so young in the faith, and they knew, because they of course had neighbors and friends, they knew that there were so many people who wanted to know about this man called Jesus, but they were just too scared to come out in public. To add to the difficulties of this time, both Anne and Adoniram were struggling with cholera and fevers and many other illnesses of the tropics. And at that time, one of the key remedies for any kind of serious illness was a sea voyage. They actually believed that, you know, just breathing in the salty air would cure you of, like, any kind of serious disease. Now, Anne wasn't getting any better, and she was so sick and weak that there seemed really no choice. So, although it was heart-wrenching, they realized that she needed to go back to America, get some proper medical help, because to stay in Burma meant certain death. But to leave Adoniram behind was very hard. Anne set sail for America, hoping that the sea voyage in itself would heal her, and then maybe the medical help and supplies from America would be able to restore her further, and she would come back well and healthy. But her health didn't really improve on the sea voyage. She had first to go to England, and then from England take another voyage to America. So this was a really long period of time. And her health, even when she arrived in England, was very fragile, and she was given the best care from family and friends. People had heard of her, and heard of her and Adoniram, and the fact that they were in Burma. And everybody tried to help and give her the absolute best. But perhaps the absolute best in those days wasn't particularly helpful. I mean, in those days, the recommendation was these blue pills, which contained mercury, which of course we know is highly toxic and creates exhaustion and is damaging to the brain. And of course, bloodletting, where they cut into a vein and just let the blood run. So Anne didn't seem to improve. But despite this, she did rest, and perhaps that was helpful. But she wasn't idle. She kept writing, and she wrote during this time an account of the mission in Burma. She gave people an understanding of the country, of what they were doing, of the culture of the people. And this little account was so helpful. In fact, it was so inspirational to many people. It got circulated in England and in America, and it really actually inspired many people to think about coming over to Southeast Asia. But the whole trip was meant to restore Anne, and that it didn't. But it did raise a huge amount of awareness of what they were doing there. Meanwhile, Adoniram was missing Anne terribly. He knew that he would never hear from her. You know, in those days, there was no way of communicating. It would be years before he would get a letter from her. And he wrote to a friend that to have her leave was to have his right eye gouged out or his right arm chopped off. That was how he felt about having Anne leave. And although he really dreamt of a time when she would return and they could go somewhere together and in quiet and they could have their own time together, he knew that he really needed to lay that down too. He realized that his life was far too short and that the Burmese people were perishing eternally day after day. He knew he had to place his happiness, their happiness, second to the kingdom of God. It was 2 years before Anne returned to Rangoon. And the couple were reunited very happily, but their sense of urgency was seen in the fact that Anne didn't even unpack. Adoniram had found an opening to travel to the capital city, Ava. The king's brother had shown interest in the gospel and had written to Adoniram and invited him to come back. And so Anne didn't unpack. They just loaded another ship, and she and Adoniram together went to Ava to set up there. Anne was very excited about doing this. She thought that a presence in the capital would be good. They would set up a school. At least people could see the good that they could do. But essentially, this was a very, very dangerous move, and many people said it was not a wise decision. At this time, the country was definitely on the brink of war against Britain, and there was general anger towards any foreigner. But Adoniram and some other missionaries were sure that being American would be okay. They weren't British after all. But other missionaries had left and encouraged them to do the same. They said, you've got to get out. You've got to get out of the country. There were ships sailing to Bengal, and many of them urged Anne and Adoniram and one other missionary by the name of Dr. Price to leave. But they decided that they wouldn't. They would stay. The country needed them there. They couldn't just all leave. Well, war did break out. And, of course, Adoniram and Dr. Price were arrested. Being American, being British, what did it matter? There was no distinction made. They were foreign. And so in 1824, they were arrested and thrown into a Burmese prison. Now, Anne was left on her own. And she sprang into action. She immediately burnt all letters, memoirs, journals, anything that mentioned any association with England, Britain, or anybody British. And she went around and appealed to magistrate after magistrate. They were in prison for being British spies. And she was saying, they're not even British, they're American. How could they be spies? But it was all to no avail. People turned away from her. There was one Burmese man by the name of Mung Ing who accompanied her everywhere. He also was a believer. And he went and found out what prison Adoniram and Dr. Price were held at. Meanwhile, Anne was writing to every princess and every person in high place she could. And she would get these letters back from the king's sisters, which simply said, I do not understand it, which culturally meant, I'm not getting involved. Only one governor, the governor of that area, was sympathetic to her, but he had no authority to release prisoners. Finally, Anne, thanks to Mung Ing, found the prison. It was about a 3-kilometer walk from her home, the home that they had set up in Ava. And here, you know, in the prison, it was a horrendous place. It was full of torture. It was horribly dirty, full of all sorts of human evil. You see, the prisoners were bound in these heavy chains, chains that cut into you. And every day they were hung up on these bamboo poles so that they would be upside down with just their sort of back of their neck touching the ground, making it almost impossible to sleep. Every night the mosquitoes would come off the rice paddies and invade the prison, and they would be eaten by these mosquitoes. When Anne came, Judson could only just crawl to the door of the prison to greet Anne with tears. But the guards would order her away and they would push him back. So every day, Anne walked to this prison with food for her husband and for Mr. Price and whatever luxury she could pass to them. She bore the taunts and insults of the guards to come, sometimes for only a few seconds to see her husband. And in between, she was feverishly appealing again and again to anybody who would be able to secure their release. She was something like the persistent widow in Jesus' parable. Another thing she did was she wrapped up Adoniram's New Testament, the translation that he'd been working on for 10 years, and she smuggled it into a pillow. She knew that any time something could happen to her, So the only place it could be safe was with Adoniram in prison, and she managed to get it into him. All this time, she was pregnant. And for 7 months she did this. She wrote, she walked, she cooked, she paid bribes, she bore insults, she bore hunger just to secure her husband's release. At the end of 7 months, she simply couldn't do it anymore. She was about to give birth. And alone, she gave birth to little Maria Judson in 1825. 3 weeks later, when she had enough energy, she continued again. She cooked and she walked to the prison with her little tiny newborn tied onto her. Adoniram crawled to the prison door to meet his newborn daughter. And he composed a poem for her, a poem that is a profound mix of his grief and his joy. This is an excerpt. Why open thy little eyes? What would my darling see? Thy sorrowing mother's bended form? Thy father's agony? There is a God on high, the glorious King of Kings. It is he to whom thy mother prays, whose love she sits and sings. And to that gracious God, my darling, I commend. Be thou the helpless orphan's stay, her father and her friend. The war was going very badly for Burma, and the king was angry. He wanted those prisoners executed, all the foreigners. Well, Anne's hard work with the governor was paying off. He couldn't secure their release, but one thing he could do was stop an execution. But she actually didn't know whether she could trust him. And then one day, an order was given, and suddenly all the prisoners were taken out of the prison and tied together, and they were marched out of the city. And they were dragged brutally, and they were forced to march with bare feet, half-starved, to some remote area somewhere. Now, Anne appealed again to the governor, but he said to her, "You cannot do anything more for your husband. Now just look after yourself." But Anne ignored this, and she decided that she was going to follow Adoniram wherever it was. The faithful cook, who was one of her servants, said that he would come with her. And also Mung Ing, who had stayed with her, had gathered information, and he'd worked out where they'd been taken. He stayed behind to sort of secure the mission house. And then soon, he also managed to sneak into the prison, because Adoniram, of course, couldn't take anything with him. And so Mung Ing had snuck into the prison and managed to steal back the pillow containing that translation of the New Testament. So Anne, with tiny Maria tied onto her, the faithful cook, and actually 2 Burmese children that she had adopted, made this huge journey to this remote place, this town or village called Ung Pen La. And Adoniram himself had walked there. He had walked on bare feet across hot sand, kilometre after kilometre, so much so that the blisters that formed around his feet had disappeared into raw skin. There was so much pain and suffering that actually Adoniram was so tempted just to end it all. He wanted so desperately to throw himself off the side of the road and into the river, to end everything. It was that hard. But he had to consciously get rid of this temptation and realize that his purpose here had not been finished. And if the Lord wanted him to live he must. Many prisoners did die on that journey out of sheer exhaustion. When they finally arrived in this remote village, the prison was nothing but a shell. There was hardly anything there. There was hardly a roof. And they hardly needed chaining up either, because they were so exhausted, Adoniram himself couldn't even sit up. And they couldn't walk, their feet were that mangled. In fact, he suffered permanent damage from this time, as did probably all those prisoners. And then Anne arrived, and he was so shocked to see her. He wept and wept, and he said, "Why have you come? I hoped you would not follow. You cannot live here." And it certainly did seem that way. But Anne did manage to live in this tiny remote village. She paid for a room that just had some straw over the dirt. And she managed to use that as a home for herself and the little children with her. And she cooked, she did what she could to get food and pass it to Adoniram. But the strain of the previous months meant that she was so weak and she became sick. And then her milk completely dried up. And little Maria cried and cried. But Anne couldn't do anything. She couldn't even get up. And Adoniram begged the jailers, and they softened enough to let Adoniram hold the little girl. And he would crawl from house to house, begging someone to give her a drop of milk. Well, the war was won by the British. And now suddenly, the Burmese army needed a translator. And there was only one man that could do that job. And that was Adoniram Judson. So officials came in search for this man. They needed him to interpret negotiations and all of that type of thing. But the jailers saw this as one last chance for extortion. So they wouldn't let Anne go. And Anne said, "I was never even a prisoner here. I came here of my own free will." But they wouldn't let her go. And so she ended up having to hand over everything she had, every item of food, so that they would let her go. Adoniram was transferred up the river, and he spent 6 weeks with the various government officials translating. And finally, after that time, all the foreigners were formally released. This whole trial had lasted just under 2 years, and how either of them even survived was a miracle. But they were both a shadow of their former selves. In fact, both of them were unrecognizable. Now, Anne did reflect on all that happened. You know, had they done the right thing? Had they been arrogant in insisting on staying? Why hadn't they listened to the advice? Perhaps they should have gone. But Anne, when she thought back and examined herself, she really felt that at the time she acted in good conscience. And they both did feel, as is written in Jeremiah chapter 10, "It is not in man who walks to direct his steps." But Anne did beg the Lord that these years of terrible, hard affliction would not be in vain. Her favorite motto at this time, as she wrote in a letter, was simply this: "On earth we serve God, in heaven we praise him." Now, with British control, they had a lot more freedom. And they were really optimistic at the new opportunities that were ahead of them. And they started immediately working again. They decided to move and settle in Amherst. They'd hardly arrived there when Adoniram again was presented with an opportunity. Now, with new government and all sorts of different situations, there would be another opportunity perhaps to speak to the king, to the royal family, and maybe secure more kind of, liberal or freedom in the country, to travel around the country. It would only be 3 or 4 months, and maybe, you know, they would be reunited again. Well, as usual, travel was very, very unpredictable. And of course, he left in July, hoping to get back in early November, but he wasn't back. And on the 24th of November in 1826, he received a very simple letter: "Mrs. Judson is dead." Anne had actually died a month before. Her health had been so broken by the suffering of the previous years. and she had contracted an illness and died. When Adoniram returned in January, 7 months after leaving, his little daughter didn't recognize who he was. And he stood at her grave, and he wept, and he wept. He wrote, "She has been torn from her husband's bleeding heart, but infinite wisdom and love have presided as ever. Faith decides that it is all right, and the decision of faith, eternity will soon confirm." Little Maria, also malnourished, died exactly 6 months later. I'm just going to get a tissue. Sorry. After this time, Adoniram sunk into a profound grief. He was really a broken man. Now, two other missionaries had just arrived, George and Sarah Boardman. They'd arrived from America and they rallied around him. They really tried to console him, but he was really inconsolable. He had an iron will, however, and he was determined to continue his work. He translated the Bible, he wrote, but he retreated from people, and he actually went to live in the jungle all alone. This was a very dark time for Adoniram. He had no joy, and he wrote that he did not feel the presence of the Lord at all. He tried to examine himself. He wanted to renounce everything, to see if even in being a missionary there was some pride in him. He had suffered so much, and it was a very, very dark time for his soul. But he did cling on to the hope. He had hope in his eternal God, and that hope was the anchor to his soul. He came through this time, and he wrote, "And when the crown of life is set on our heads, and we know assuredly that we shall die no more, we shall make heaven's arches ring with songs of praise to him who has loved us and washed us from our sins in his own blood." Eight years had passed, and even in that time, George Boardman had died, leaving his wife Sarah alone with a baby son. Sarah, of course, was told to immediately return to America. It was simply not safe for a woman to stay, but she actually refused. She really wanted to continue her husband's work, and she ran this school in a remote hillside town amongst the Karen people. And together they had done so much, traveling through the villages and speaking to people who were inquiring, wanting to know about the writings of the man called Jesus. And she did this, continued this alone. She traveled through jungle, through mountains, crossed rivers with her little son tied on. She visited village after village. She spoke to people. She learnt the dialects. She taught in the schools, and she taught so well that even afterwards, the Sarah Boardman method was referred to and suggested as the way of setting up a school. After 3 years of Sarah working all alone, she and Adoniram were brought together, common grief and also a shared vision. And they married. And they continued their work together amongst many people, many of the Karen people and other tribes in those remote areas in Burma. And then Sarah too was taken. And once again, Adoniram was alone. Adoniram finished the translation of the whole Bible. And this is actually the translation that is still used today. And this was a labor of 21 years. He poured his heart into this because he saw this as a really heavy burden, a responsibility to unfold to a whole nation the Word of God in their own language, the revelation of the Most High God. Well, Adoniram did marry again later, and it was actually his wife Emily that conveyed a lot of his story to us. Because Adoniram himself rarely spoke in public, particularly about the trials of those 2 years. It was so traumatic for him, he couldn't even talk about it. And he often, in the one time that he went back to America, he actually disappointed people by not talking more about his experiences and what things were like in Burma. And instead, he used to speak on the love of God. Adoniram's health, of course, was so poor, and he wasn't an old man by any means. But in his later years, he couldn't even speak above a whisper. And in fact, if he did, he would cough blood. And his feet had never fully recovered. His ankles were quite mangled. He could never walk properly. And then in 1850, in June, he set out on a voyage, hoping to restore some of his health. But on that voyage, he died. He was 61 years old. And one of the last sentences that he said was, "How few there are who die so hard." His body was thrown into the sea in the Bay of Bengal, and it was 4 months later that Emily found out. Anne and Adoniram saw very little fruit for their labors during their lifetime. But God did work mightily amongst the Burmese people. First, there was just one convert. And then, for many years, there was only about 10, and then maybe 18. But shortly after Adoniram's death, 38 years of labor in Burma, and the converts were said to number about 210,000. Anne and Adoniram were believers who the Lord gifted to build his church. And they presented their bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God. And they did that over and over again. I'm going to end with something very, very simple that Anne wrote. Simple to write, hard to live, but boy did she live it, and she lived it so clearly. A little while, and we are in eternity. Before we find ourselves there, let us do much for Christ. We might finish by singing a song that came to my mind as I was really researching these Adoniram and Anne Judson. It's song number 2, A Passion for Thee. And certainly it's my prayer when we read about these people who came before. I think, of course, it's encouraging, but hopefully it also can change us.
Let's stand.
Set my heart, O dear Father, on thee only. Give me a thirst for thy presence divine. Lord, keep my focus on loving thee wholly. Purge me from earth, turn my heart after.
Praise God, as we hear the testimony of Antonio Judson and his wife, and it's just so encouraged. It just reminded me of the book of Hebrews. The Hebrew writers say that they are like a crowd of witnesses surrounding us. And these are the people who should encourage us to throw off every sins that so entangle us and to really give our life and to really serve the Lord Jesus in this little while that we are still here. So I pray that you all have been encouraged and hope that you can go back and think about what you have heard and think about how you should live your life and how we should live our life because the Lamb of God is worthy. He's the one who have laid down his life for us. He has paid the price for us. The meeting will have to end here because of time, but we encourage you to hang around and to have fellowship with one another. We have decided that we're going to still have the gathering at the park. So if you're not sure where to go, just meet at the deck, and then someone will walk from here to the park, take about 10 to 12 minutes to walk there. and we'll meet you there if you can make it. For those of you who are not sure where it is, it's on the other side of the station, north of Gibbon Street. Okay, so if you go past the other side of the station, you keep walking, you should be able to hit the park. It's called Auburn Park. Okay. I think, is there any other announcements? Yep. Okay.
Must be a slide. In the meantime, oh. yes, just a quick announcement about our youth group for years 7 to 12, and a little bit above as well, if you'd like, is coming back next week. So the upcoming Friday will be the first youth group of the new year, and it will be live here in Auburn for all Auburn and Kellyville high schoolers between 7 to 9, so 5th of February on the Friday, 7 to 9 p.m. is the restart of the youth group, very exciting, where it will be right here in the hall once again. For everyone, try to make it if you fit the demographic. We very much appreciate it, yeah. And also supper is provided. So yeah, that's a very quick announcement for all those. This is what's called applies to. Thank you. Yeah, thank you for that. Please, yeah, come. Very exciting. Very exciting.
Yeah, pass the word around, so everyone who is in high school are welcome to come to this gathering. We also ask you to pray for Kellyville. There are some young people there who are gathering in the bilingual service. They find that it's a bit difficult. So we're going to start the English-only meeting so that the Chinese meeting and the English meeting will be separated. And so that will be happening on the second week of February. So pray for them, and so that the Lord can use those meetings to encourage the young people and the other Chinese-speaking brothers and sisters as well. This afternoon in the Chinese meeting, there is a baptism as well. So if you'd like to come and witness that, you're welcome to come back. They'll start from 1:30, and you'll finish about 2:45. I'll see you next time.